Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Today is Thursday, March 5th, 2026. My dear friend, my dear, dear friend, Uncle Larry, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson joins us now. Colonel Wilkerson, a pleasure. Before we start, there is some breaking news, not directly relevant to what we're going to discuss, but newsworthy nevertheless. The White House has just announced that President Trump has fired Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem and will nominate Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, I believe, of Oklahoma to replace her. I do not know of Senator Mullen's background, if it's in law enforcement or just politics, but that's the news that broke between the time you and I said hello and the time we came on air. So in the last 2 minutes.
Good news. I don't know Mullen. I know the other senator pretty well, but I don't know Mullen.
Yeah. To our subject at hand. But what is it about the nature of this war, Israel and U.S. against Iran, that in your view, the United States does not adequately comprehend?
You've been reading your Clausewitz.
I've also been following my Uncle Larry on other channels where the hosts are friends whose work I admire.
It is the most important thing before embarking on using force for diplomatic or national security means or ends. And it's just terrible here because the nature of the war is so much different from what Hegseth, Rubio, and Trump are saying they interpreted as, though I will admit they're all over the map about that, especially of late Rubio. But they seem to think it's a short war that includes tons and tons of aerial bombing, which in history has never proved its ability since it was invented to be decisive in warfare of any type. But they seem to think that's what it's all about. Short, sweet, a few bombs drop, and all of a sudden we have what Netanyahu wants, which is total chaos in a country of 93 million people. Or we have what we want, which I think is regime change to a more favorable regime in terms of our interests. Neither of those things is possible, given the nature of this conflict. And the second aspect, well, there are lots of aspects of it, but the second aspect of it that really troubles me is our interpretation of short and sweet and their interpretation, which is closer to the truth, of this is going to take you a long time, at the end of which you will not have accomplished any of your objectives. Many of your people will be dead or wounded. Lots of equipment that cost you billions of dollars will be used up to no avail. Israel will be decimated, which is happening right now, even as I speak, especially in Tel Aviv, where roughly 4.5 million people of the Israeli population live. And it's nothing like what you think, in other words. And I think that's a very valid interpretation of the nature of this war. And it's extremely dangerous that we're in it without even a scintilla of understanding of that nature.
Wow. What would have possessed, other than the president's political goals, the president to think that this could be a quick war? That's the first half of this question. The second half of this question is, wouldn't the Pentagon have told him that a quick war is impossible?
I think there was an attempt to do that, but I once walked into Colin Powell's office and in a moment of hubris, I admit, but reality, I said, General, never make a U.S. Air Force officer chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff again. It's in the disinterest of the country. He smiled and said, doesn't matter that I agree with you. They just don't understand warfare in its full component. All they understand is the technology of dropping bombs and flying airplanes. That's all they understand. Even saying that, my insight into the Pentagon might be wrong, is that General Kane, the current chairman, did register some objections, mostly based, I'm told, on the scarcity, actually, of U.S. munitions for anything longer than a couple or 3 weeks, especially precision-guided munitions. Ukraine, other allies, Israel itself, of course, a big user, have used these things up to an alarming case. So, but Cain did apparently register some objections. I understand the director of the Joint Staff, the three-star Navy admiral that Hicks has summarily fired, was also raising some objections. So, you know, a sailor had some brains too.
Do you think that the Washington Post piece about 10 days ago, banner headlines, Pentagon chiefs skeptical of Trump plans, I'm paraphrasing it, was a leak of, was a truthful leak?
I think so. If there is any remaining brain power in the Pentagon, and I have to think that some of it has survived, even at the elevated flag rank level. Hicks has done a good job of ferreting out people who he started at Quantico. He actually started before that, but he started big time at Quantico, marking down people whom he thought he needed to get rid of because they wouldn't be compliant enough to do what he wanted to do or what Trump wanted to do. And he's been doing that ever since. And he's working on the ranks, too. He's working on the ranks with, of all things, Christian nationalism, which I think he believes in sincerely. But it's extremely dangerous what he's doing with regard to the military. And I'll give you a very graphic example of that. This is what came up today from one NCO, non-commissioned officer out in the field, a fairly senior NCO. This morning, our commander opened up the combat, this morning being yesterday morning, our commander opened up the combat readiness status briefing by urging us not to be afraid as to what is happening with our combat operations in Iran right now. He urged us to tell our troops that this was, quote, all part of God's divine plan, unquote. And he specifically referenced numerous citations out of the book of Revelation referring to Armageddon and the imminent return of Jesus Christ. He said that, quote, President Trump has been anointed by Jesus to light the signal fire in Iran to cause Armageddon and mark his return to earth, end of quote. Our ambassador in Jerusalem would agree with that.
Yes, our wacky ambassador in Jerusalem would agree with that, but how can that possibly be part of a Pentagon briefing? Have they forgotten the First Amendment?
Apparently they have, Judge. This is coming from all over the military, all ranks, from flag officers all the way down to enlisted men.
Flag officers means admirals and generals.
Admirals and generals. And it's fairly consistent now. It's coming in from all manner of contacts. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation, on whose board I sit, has in the military developed over the past 20 years, some of which are 3- and 4-star generals and admirals.
How much longer can the Pentagon's ships hold out with respect to munitions, ammo, and other necessities?
I watched Doug on your show this morning early. I don't know when it was taped, but it was on for me early this morning. And he's right. Not very long. And in some of the more critical munitions, take, for example, Patriot batteries and their missiles, I don't think it's much longer than 8 to 10 days. And we're already injuring some of our other alliances, take that with Korea, for example, by showing them we don't really care about the assets on the peninsula that are strictly supposedly there to defend them against North Korea, because we pick them up and move them whenever we need them. And we just did that off the Korean peninsula. That's very damaging for the alliance, because you tell the Koreans the truth, that you're not really there to protect them. What you're there for is to fight China and anybody else in the world that you need to fight, like Iran.
Members of Congress who are head over heels over the invasion and the military-industrial complex, hang on to your seat, Colonel, if you haven't heard this, are about to propose a supplemental appropriation of $50 billion for the Pentagon. Colonel, they just gave them $1 trillion. Why would they, and they can't even spend it all, why would they give them another $50 billion other than to show the folks back home how pro-war they are with borrowing against the future?
You got it. That's the reason. I listened to Mark Warner this morning. I was rather stunned by his comments. He's a Democrat, of course, but he's very important on a very important committee. And I didn't think I would hear a Democrat saying this, certainly not someone like Chuck Schumer, but Mark Warner's a pretty powerful congressman or senator. But he said, essentially, this is not our war. This is Israel's war. We have no business fighting a war for another country. I didn't think I'd ever hear that out of any sitting senator, let alone a one with the stature of Mark Warner on the committee he's on.
Right. He is, correct me if I'm wrong, the senior senator from Virginia.
Yes.
And is the ranking Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Yes.
Where his opposite number is a taller, more articulate version of Lindsey Graham, otherwise known as Tom Cotton.
Absolutely.
How could you work with these people? Well, put that aside.
I asked myself every day. I asked Tom Massie that many moons ago. Ambassador Chaz Freeman and I were in an office alone with Tom Massie. And I won't repeat his answer.
Yeah. Well, Thomas is a brilliant guy, the most ardent defender of the Constitution on Capitol Hill, along with his fellow Kentuckian Senator Rand Paul. But I know Thomas, and he can use choice words. But this
Walt Jones was pretty good at that too.
Yes, God rest his soul. God rest his soul. Yes, he was. But this $50 billion thing will probably pass right through. Many Democrats will be afraid to vote against it. Mark Warner won't be afraid. Thomas Massie, a Republican, won't be afraid. Colonel, earlier today, the president said he thought the war would be over in 2 weeks. Does he? Now, this is an open-ended question, but on this topic, does he know what he's talking about?
Try 2 years plus, Mr. President. Try at least 2 years plus, and many, many bumps in the road. Including, I saw a video this morning, real video, not CNN, though they have been better, but real video out of Israel. They are getting absolutely pummeled.
That was to be my next question. How badly is Israel getting pummeled? And where is Netanyahu?
I think he's on a plane 90% of the time. He's flying around. He's flying around the Mediterranean. I understood he was on a private jet coming into Mar-a-Lago to talk to Trump. I don't know if that's true or not, but my source is pretty good. He's staying out of the fray as best he can because he knows that he is number one target.
How badly are the Iranians damaging Tel Aviv?
Very badly. Very badly. And it is relentless. It's not a fuselage. It's relentless. And increasingly, and in the latter stages of this 15-minute video, you could see that fewer and fewer air defense missiles were going up. And at the end of it, in the last 60 seconds, which is a long time, Judge, if you're under fire, there were no Israeli missiles going up. The Iranian missiles were just getting in.
This is what would happen to your body if you ate mood sleep gummies every day. Day one, you take your first gummy at bedtime.
Wow.
It's all being lied about, of course. You can't get this. You can't even get it out of Al Jazeera or Al Arabiya. They're not allowed to film this sort of thing because he's got a wrapped down tight ban on anybody coming in there and making film other than his own propaganda people.
Well, here's the Iranian foreign minister today on NBC News asked, what are you going to do if American boots on the ground show up? You probably know how he answers, but I want you to hear him. He's very articulate. Chris, number 15.
Are you afraid of a U.S. invasion in your country?
No, we are waiting for them.
You are waiting for the U.S. military to invade the ground troops?
Yes, because we are confident that we can confront them, and that would be a big disaster for them.
So you're saying that Iran is ready and willing to take on the U.S. military if there were to be ground troops?
Well, we were ready for this war even more than the previous war. So you can see, you know, the quality of our missiles, how much they are upgraded after the last war, because we learned lots of lessons. And we are prepared for any other eventuality, even, you know, a ground invasion. So our soldiers are prepared for any scenario. When I said that we are waiting for them, it didn't mean that we are waiting for continuation of the war. No, but we have prepared ourselves to confront with any scenario, with any eventuality, any possibility, and we know that we can handle that.
Surprised?
I have no trouble believing that. And he knows, his intelligence is good enough, that we would be hard-pressed, Judge, extremely hard-pressed, to put anything on the ground in Iran on a timely basis that was in excess of maybe 100,000 troops. They will be swallowed in Iran, swallowed. They'll all be wounded, captured, or dead within 6 weeks.
Yeah. Well, here's the same interview where he's being asked, are you interested in a ceasefire?
We are not asking for a ceasefire. And we don't see any reason why we should negotiate with the U.S. when we negotiated with them twice, and every time they attacked us at the middle of negotiations. So there is no request for a ceasefire by us, and there is no request for the negotiation with the U.S. From us. We have never sent any messages to them.
The truly bizarre thing, Judge, is the reporter who is questioning him. He's acting as if he's stunned, and disbelief is his major component of that stunned. He hadn't done his homework. He hadn't done his research. That is so typical of the American media now that it makes you ill to think about it. We are so ill served by the mainstream media, who are not covering this war in any real depth whatsoever.
I'll give you another Q&A from the same interview. I hate to consume all of my time with you with these, but this stuff just came out and it's profound. Number 18, Chris.
Well, I think, you know, now 6 days after the war, it is clear that the U.S. Has failed to achieve its main goal, which was a clean, rapid victory. They failed to achieve that, and now they are trying to justify why they did attack us, and they have, you know, presented so many different reasons, but none of them worked. And now they are talking about, you know, Plan B. And I believe that, you know, their Plan B would be even a bigger failure.
He's done his homework. I also watched videos this morning of us attacking what we were attacking in Serbia, if you remember Bill Clinton's war. Cardboard cutouts on the ground that looked from the air like planes, like ballistic missiles, like TELS launchers, and like other instruments of war. And we expended very precious and costly precision-guided munitions on killing these things. And then, like typical Air Force pilots, reported them back as casualties of war and great kills. And we just got this and we just got that. All they're shooting at is cardboard.
When the attack began, members of Congress, in order to avoid the moral, legal, and constitutional questions, argued it's not a war. Watch this, Colonel.
Yeah.
And we may have casualties. That often happens in war.
I don't know if this is technically a war.
We didn't start this war, but under President Trump, we are finishing it.
This isn't a war. We haven't declared war.
The Secretary of Defense, who calls himself the Secretary of War, said today this is a war.
We set the terms of this war from start to finish.
Nobody should classify this as war. It is combat operations.
War is hell and always will be.
Strategic strikes are not war.
Okay, dude, don't complicate getting back in shape after 50. Start this Monday with just 7 minutes a day of chair.
Yeah. I caught them in their own lies.
Right. The guy with the shaved head is Congressman Brian Mast,
yeah,
who lost his legs below his knees in either Afghanistan or Iraq, and I feel sorry for him for that, but then joined the IDF. And from time to time appears on the floor of the House of Representatives in a full dress IDF uniform.
Right.
Is that even lawful?
It shouldn't be. And I think there are probably some regulations in all the services, at least, that prohibit that. I know I had a student in my seminar at the George Washington University, good guy. He had served in the IDF for a year and he was going for a security clearance. And he came to me and he said, I can't get it. And they won't give it to me. I can't get a security clearance. I said, well, what's your past? He told me. I said, you served in the IDF. There's a law. If you serve in a foreign military, you can't get a security clearance, period.
Wonder if this guy gets a security clearance.
I probably does. And that law was, you know, 15 years ago. So what has Trump done to that? What did Biden do to that? Biden probably eliminated that.
Well, how effective has Iran been in attacking U.S. assets in Gulf and neighboring Gulf states, Colonel?
Very successful, given the kind of very careful, selective way they're doing it. And we're hiding things, Judge. I have it on good information basis that we've had one of the only four, I think it is, we have what we call a supply and support ship for a strike group featuring a carrier at its center, has been hit and is aflame. One of her escorts has been hit and is aflame. I think that's probably true because I'm looking at what we've done consequential of that. We've moved another 400 to 500 miles south of Iran. So we're now 1,600 miles out in the Arabian Sea, actually the Indian Ocean. So the missiles are being used very selectively, and they haven't used their Mach 3, Mach 4, and even possibly Mach 5 missiles on a major combatant yet. And they could have killed both of the ships that are closest to the Strait of Hormuz almost instantly, sunk them with all hands on board. They haven't. So I have to believe that they're being circumspect about doing something so dramatic, and something probably China and Russia are advising them to hold off on for the moment.
Colonel, what happens if the CIA arms the Kurds and tries to foment a land invasion by them?
Disaster for the Kurds, as they are wont to incur, because they have really not very smart leaders, been dealing with them since Operation Provide Comfort in northern Iraq after the first Iraq war. And what they will have then is a pincer movement on themselves, because the reason the Russians and Chinese shipped in many attack helicopters a few months ago to Iran is to fight those very types of forces, and they will decimate them. And at the same time, Erdogan is going to be in their rear. I wouldn't want to be the Kurds.
Right. Meaning when they turn around and try and come home, wherever that is, Afghanistan, yeah. Erdogan's troops will slaughter them, because the last thing in the world he wants is an independent Kurdish country.
You're right.
Even though there are many millions of them, they may be the largest ethnic group in the world without their own country.
And they're split up, Syria, Iran, and Iraq, and also, of course, many of them in Southeast Turkey, and they have very bad leadership in terms of unifying.
Well, Colonel, thank you very much for this. I look forward to seeing you next week, sooner if we need you, but thank you so much, my dear friend.
Surely. Take care. You're doing a good job.
Thank you, Colonel. All the best to you. A great man indeed. A fearless man. I love him.